Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael. Excuse me, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, January the 23rd, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. My apologies. Welcome, Michael.
Well, that's Jeannie in a healing process. Cleansing the next layer. You know, we talked the other day about that lung stuff, and here it moves. It's a good thing. Not always Dr. Feelgood, as we've said so often. But welcome, everybody, to the show. We're delighted that you're here, and we're honored to have this opportunity to spend this time with you and tap into these ancient Aramaic teachings. And at the same time, once we get a piece from the ancient Aramaic, to bring forward the understanding from the first century into what's happening in our culture today, into the insights that come from our culture. And so there's a piece that I've shared on the show previously, and it seems like it might be time to share this piece again. And it's a piece of writing that was done by a gentleman named David Bohm. David Bohm was a physicist, and you know, he worked at with Einstein in his laboratory. He worked with Oppenheimer, who's the guy who directed the making of the atomic bomb in World War II. Actually, it's interesting. I was doing some more research on Bohm the other day, and he actually worked out some of the mathematics that was used to produce the atomic bomb. But an interesting thing happened. When he was a teenager, you know, teenagers do crazy things, he joined the Communist Party. And so his loyalty was suspect. And as a physicist, when he worked this mathematics out, he worked under Oppenheimer, his information was immediately classified, and he wasn't allowed to work with it. It was taken away from him. He wasn't even allowed to write his own thesis, which was this work that he'd been working on. And Oppenheimer stood up for him and said, he did the research, it's his, and he got his doctorate, but he actually was prohibited from finishing his thesis because the Department of War immediately classified what he was doing as top secret, and he didn't have the clearance because of his teenage indiscretion. He was actually ultimately forced to leave the country. But
Michael,
he worked with,
if you can get closer to your mic or something, I just got a text that your voice is coming across garbled. And they'd like to hear what you're saying.
Okay. Well, I'm as close as I can possibly get. Is that any better?
I can hear you good.
Can you hear me? Can you? Okay.
Yes.
Right. So that's better?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So Bohm worked with Carl Pribram at Stanford University, as well as with Oppenheimer and Einstein. And he helped to source the holonomic model of the mind and worked with, he made some major contributions in the world of quantum physics and physics and the mind. And so as he looks at what the problem is, what Bohm comes up with is a statement of what it is that we do with our minds. And, you know, if you go back to the ancient Aramaic, we hear the words, as opposed to the opening words in the book of John being, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. What it actually says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. So when I tap into certain mind energy, that mind energy literally, as we've heard from cell biologist Bruce Lipton, becomes a neuropeptide and shows up as chemistry in the cell. So what we do with our minds is key in the process. And Bohm did some writing about this, and he coined a term, which if you've done worksheets, you've seen the term sustained incoherence. So here's what Bohm says. What is the source of all this trouble? And when he says that, he's talking about the whole culture. What is the source of all this trouble? I'm saying, just a minute. My phone decided to flip, excuse me. I'm saying that the source is basically in thought. Many people would think that such a statement is crazy because thought is the one thing we have with which to solve our problems. That's part of our tradition. Yet it looks as if the thing we use to solve our problems is the source of our problems. The general tacit assumption is thought is just telling you the way things are and that it's not doing anything, that you're inside there deciding what to do with the information. But you don't decide to do with the information. Thought runs you. Thought, however, gives false information that you're running it, that you're the one who controls thought. Whereas, actually, thought is the one which controls each one of us. Unless, of course, we discipline ourselves and start to get rid of Goliath, start to get rid of that monster. Thought is creating divisions out of itself and then saying that they are there naturally. This is another major feature of thought. Thought doesn't know it's doing something, and then it struggles against what it's doing. It doesn't want to know that it's doing it, and thought struggles against the results, trying to avoid those unpleasant results while keeping up with the same way of thinking. That is what I call, says David Bohm, sustained incoherence. And so if we're living in a world of pain and turmoil and trauma, the reason we are is because we are engaging in energies, thought energies, mind energy, that does not belong within our structure. And when we do that, we create results. And those results, if our thinking is off base, result in internal pain. There's an internal warning mechanism that tells us base. And when we begin to correct our thought, when we begin to remove the qualities of thought that never belong within our structure, then everything in our world starts to change. Of course, Yeshua had the tools. 2,000 years ago, Yeshua knew precisely how to show people a way to have direct access to their hidden thought processes and how to correct those thought processes. The tool is called forgiveness. The tool has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook because of what's happening inside of me. The tool is how I go inside myself and become aware of the insane thought processes that are happening inside of me and remove those energetic patterns. So in essence, what we're offering is that you go all the way forward to Paul, and Paul says, be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And what most people would rather do is renew somebody else. There's something wrong with you, and you better change because you're the reason I'm in pain. Well, you can't feel pain from anything outside of you, and short of somebody coming up and punching you in the nose. And even then, in order for somebody to show up to punch you in the nose, you've got to have a thought process that supports that. You know, I'm a victim. I deserve it. You know, I don't deserve better. Then you're involved in that process. And so Yeshua showed precisely how to go to those parts of the mind which are hidden for the average person and how to clean up those parts of mind, literally removing what never belonged and engaging in mind energy that truly comes from the source of what and who we are and gives us the opportunity to consciously create what happens in our lives. So to really start to look at the idea that, you know, if you hold that somebody else is the problem, your mind will make a picture, and your picture will be made of your thoughts. And the thoughts will be yours, they'll be about you, and they'll have impact on your physiology. So if you think your spouse, your children, your parents are the problem in your life, then your mind's going to show you all kinds of evidence to prove that's true. And until you stop calling or start calling that thing a liar and recognize that it's not telling you the truth, the tendency will be to be stuck in those thought patterns. So that's what we're here to look at, and that first century Aramaic forgiveness process is absolutely the most potent and powerful way I know of to access directly those unconscious dynamics and begin to work through them. So that's what we're here to support you in. We're delighted that you're with us today. And Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us? Are you with us, Dr. Tim? Jeannie, are you on mute? Have I gotten lost? I'm not sure what's going on. So if you can hear me, folks, be patient with us for a minute. I'm going to see if I can find out what's happening. Can anybody talk to me? Dr. Tim, are you there? You turned on? Okay, Julie just texted me and told me that she hears me fine. But for some reason,
I'm not hearing Jeannie or Dr. Tim or anybody else. So let me just check with her. I'm going into the room where we're staying.
But thanks for calling me
back. And,
all right, thanks,
Tom.
Talk to you later.
Okay, cool. All right, we're back. So I was just asking if Dr. Tim was on.
He is
not. He's not here today. Oh, I think he said he had something going on today.
We do not have any hands up either. And so Lonnie and I have just been chatting in the chat room, but there are no questions, so.
Okay. Well, if anybody has a thought for us or a question, is that that comment that I just read from David Bohm stimulate any thoughts for you, any questions, any way we can support you in understanding this this first century Aramaic process of forgiveness and walking through, working through what never belonged in human form, hostility and fear. If you're in the phone queue, if you push 1, your hand will go up in a little control panel, and Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. If you're in the chat room, and you're just a guest, of course, unfortunately, you can't say anything. But if you do a simple registration process with Blog Talk, and they protect your information pretty well, they're pretty integritous, we've never had a problem with them, then you'll be able to ask questions in the chat room. Awesome. Well, let's say hello to somebody.
Okay. The first one's area code 901. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Brenda. How are you all doing?
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed the session yesterday. I got tied up and it slipped my mind. But
I know how that works.
I was a busy girl. Anyway, I wanted to report on during the meditation, the self-help meditation. I've been working with it every night since I've gotten it, and then I do the morning one. And it is...
You're talking about the Wellness Through Stillness meditation, CD?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it's very interesting, the little subtle changes that are going on. One of the changes that I'm noticing, because you mentioned in the meditation about how the subconscious or the spirit mind will guide you into eating only that food when you're hungry, and then food that is properly combined and also properly chewed and then will be digested. And I had been going through a season of just feeling like I was hungry all the time. And I think part of it was doing the worksheets and stuff like that and things coming up, but this was a way of trying to block doing some of the work. And since I've been listening to the wellness tape, I found myself not having those cravings that I had before, and I will, the last couple days, I would eat my morning intake, and then I wouldn't think about food until late into the afternoon. So that's been kind of interesting to watch that scenario go on in light of what I was experiencing just prior to it. So I'm encouraging anybody who has not utilized that CD to start practicing with it. It has very interesting results. Then the other thing I had mentioned, I think you did, maybe it was last week already when we were talking about the anger as the choice in the United States. And we're running out of time, so I said I called back. And I had been, I don't know if you're, Michael, I think you're probably familiar with Oath Keepers. Are you familiar
yes,
with that? Right.
I am, yes.
For those who don't know, Oath Keepers is an organization that is working to encourage anybody who has to take the oath of office to defend the Constitution, support and defend the Constitution, to actually review that oath of office. And I know most of our politicians have never read the Constitution yet, and probably most of our law enforcement people and anybody else who has to take it have never read the Constitution, yet they're swearing to an oath to uphold something that they have not even read. And so we were watching a speech by the, I believe it was the head of the Oath Keepers. And although I'm in line with everything that they're trying to do, I found it very interesting listening to that speech that the gentleman was talking about how this was war and that we were warriors and that we had warriors and that our founding fathers, you know, fought for the freedoms of this country that these people taking the oath of office are to be protecting. But I found it interesting that he kept using the terminology that this was a war and we were warriors. And the thought came to my mind while I was watching that the war for independence actually was a war so that we never had to be warriors again, that we could be, instead of men of war, men of peace. And that was the intentions of our founding fathers. And we've come so far from that as you have said, that patriotism and militarism seem to be considered the same thing. And if you're not completely in support of the war mind, then you cannot be patriotic. And so I just wanted to throw that out because in our language, we use that consistently and we listen to that consistently. And I think that with the forgiveness work that we're doing, that catching that in the speech and language and then replacing that with the thought that, no, we are men of peace and this is to be a nation of peace, might help shift that back again. That's my comment.
Awesome. Did you hear the quote that I read yesterday from Einstein? I think it was yesterday that I read from Einstein about we had to decide whether the world was a friendly place or an unfriendly place and that our choice would determine how we'd experience it?
No, I did not because I wasn't on yet yesterday. So I invite you to repeat it.
Yes, let me just get to my phone here. Here's Einstein's quote, and it's interesting, the context of this quote. He was doing a television interview, and the interviewer was asking questions about the general theory of relativity. And Einstein, when he finished talking about relativity, said, and here's something that's far more important than relativity. And here's what he says. The important question facing humanity is the universe a friendly place? This is the first and most basic question all people must answer for themselves. For if we decide that the universe is an unfriendly place, then we will use our technology, our scientific discoveries, and our natural resources to achieve safety and power by creating bigger walls to keep out the unfriendliness and bigger weapons to destroy all that which is unfriendly. And I believe we're getting to a place where technology is powerful enough that we may either completely isolate or destroy ourselves as well in the process.
if we decide that the universe is neither a friendly nor an unfriendly place, then God is essentially playing dice with the universe. Then we are simply victims to a random toss of the dice, and our lives have no real purpose or meaning. But, he says, if we decide the universe is a friendly place, then we will use our technology, our scientific discoveries, and our natural resources to create tools and models for understanding the universe. Because power and safety will come through understanding its workings and motives. God does not play dice with the universe. Your decision will determine how you experience your world. Einstein says that's more important than relativity. And you look at the billions that have been spent there. And you'll notice that the language, and this is where, 2,000 years ago, Yeshua says, the power of life and death is in your words. Literally, the power of life and death is in our words. And if we use words based in hostility or fear, then we're going to create a world based in hostility and fear. If we change the language, then we're going to start to create a world with a different language. And the language is that comes from being, that comes from love. And you'll notice what has pretty much taken over the power structure of the world is the war machine and the war language. That's just the game that's being played on the planet. And it has nothing to do with human life. It has nothing to do with the way the universe is. The universe is not an unfriendly place. The universe is an awesome space in which we live, move, and have our being, and it's made of love. Man have brainwashed others to fall into hostility and fear-based thinking and blame everybody else for it, and then wonder why they're experiencing the world the way they're experiencing it. And we each experience our world based on the choices that we make. Einstein was pretty clear about that. And, I think it's pretty awesome that he said, and this is more important than relativity.
I agree with you on that. And I think, I was mentioning that this is the same type of thought process that Columbus had as far as where we need to go in the social political arena is changing our language
right
back to that language that we want. I made a suggestion to the head of the Policemen's Association here in Memphis that we change the word police on all of the police cars, all the law enforcement cars, back to what used to be on those cars was peace officer. And
right,
I would like to see that happen, to see what kind of change would happen within a city structure, within a community, when you change the law enforcement entities back into what they used to be, what they are supposed to be, as peace officers, and focusing on that. But I haven't yet achieved that goal. However, he was very accepting of that and said that he was going to mention it on the radio talk show that he had that afternoon, but I haven't had any follow-up with him on that.
Well, when you recognize that kings want control, king wants people who will enforce king's laws, what the king calls laws, which, of course, are not laws at all. They're just the rules the king makes up, and they change from time to time. When we go into our Laws of Living course, we inform people that laws of living have nothing to do with a set of rules. It's not the rule of a superior, as kings would have us believe. And, of course, that's why we have no more peace officers. We now have law enforcement. It's because the king wants people who will get everybody to kowtow to what the king wants rather than teaching people how to live in relationship to the eternal forces that run the world. And that's what we're designed to live in relationship with, those eternal forces. We're not designed to live in relationship with the world of hostility and fear. And so a whole different game when you start shifting the language. And, I just you look all over it, and where have the peace officers gone? They're gone. And they're gone at the behest of the king. The king wants everybody to believe that he's the lawmaker. Now, I don't care whether you call him King Obama or King George or whoever he is. They're all the same. It's all the same game. They want you to believe that they know how to run your life better than you do. And they make up what they call rules or ordinances, and they try to pretend those are laws. They actually go to Washington and call themselves lawmakers, which is insane. No man has ever made a law. Law comes from the operation of eternal forces. when we live in relationship with those eternal forces, then we get liberty within the context of the law. So let's imagine we talk about the law of gravity. Nobody has ever broken the law of gravity, and nobody has ever been able to make a choice and say, you know, when I get up tomorrow morning, I don't like the law of gravity. I think I'm going to have my feet go down instead of go up. Not going to happen. The law of gravity operates. It just works. That's it. And when you recognize that it just works, as Einstein said in that quote, he says, we'll start dedicating our resources to understanding how it works. Well, you don't have to go far. Just go back to the first century Aramaic language, and you have a language that will tell you how the whole energy system operated. And it is absolutely awesome when you start to understand from that perspective, because it's being in relationship with the eternal forces that leads us to actual liberty. You know, I use an example of, imagine that you just built yourself a nice new 5,000 square foot home, and you're going to need to have it wired, and you know that the day that the electricity comes on, you are going to be sound asleep. It's going to be 3 in the morning, and you're going to be sound asleep in your bed. How many people want my great-grandmother to wire your house? Probably not. She doesn't know anything about the laws of electricity. If she doesn't, she doesn't have the liberty to work in that arena, and the house is probably going to burn down. You sure don't want to be asleep in it if she wires your house. And so it is with all of the laws. They just work. And when you understand them, that's what our Laws of Living course is about, is when you come into harmony with those eternal forces, then you have the liberty to work within them. And that's been just so misaligned and maligned by those who would rather control other people and have no real comprehension of what the law actually is.
Right, it absolutely does. And I think when you were talking about the king wants, you know, people to kowtow to them, and I've been noticing as I do more and more worksheets and get more and more back into this work that many times I'm the king and how little patience I have sometimes for wanting to have the shift go real quickly. And I have to keep reminding myself that I should be cognizant of my own language when I'm speaking about issues like this, but also that desire to be the king outside of my own life is what is permeating everywhere, and that the whole forgiveness process is around us pulling ourselves back in and being king only in our own lives and not into the lives of other people.
Actually, you don't want to be the king in your own life. You want to be in relationship with the king. You want to have direct relationship with the eternal forces. And then the eternal forces will guide you in how to run your life. But, you know, it's interesting, the subtle twists that take place. You know, a lot of people were really excited when the Star Wars movies came out. They went, oh, yeah, Star Wars, man, let the Force be with you. You don't want the Force to be with you. You want to be with the Force. It knows what's going on. It will lead you. You don't want it to be following you, or it's in, and you are in trouble. But the mind of man wants to turn it backward. The mind wants to be his own. Man wants to be his own lawmaker. You go back to Paul. Paul says, "Why is the things I would do I cannot do, and the things I would do or the things I hate are what I do?" He doesn't have a clue. And what does he do? He announced to everybody, "Well, we're not under the law anymore. I don't know how it works, but we're not under the law." Yeshua says, not one jot or tittle of the law shall pass away until heaven and earth pass away. The energy system works according to those eternal forces, and you are not independent of it, and you do not have liberty outside of that. But, you know, men want to become their own lawmakers. They want to be the king, and that's another example of it.
Well,
let's eliminate God. Let's eliminate the elemental forces. And let's pretend we can make it all up for ourselves. And that's the biggest fraud that's ever happened on the planet. And it's led to more suffering and more trauma and more pain than is imaginable.
So that would be different. What you explained about not being the king would be the difference between, and I've, in some reading, it was discussing the priestcraft and teamcraft, and I think you've mentioned it at times, craft and priestcraft versus teamship.
Yeah, that's in my book. There's a chapter on choosing teachers and the difference between the priestcraft and the true teachers.
Yeah. Thank you for that comment about there are no lawmakers. I had not thought about it that way, so this is a new way for me to think about it and put that energy out there. Is anyone else in line with their hand up?
Gee, do we have anybody else with a hand up?
Yes, we do. Okay, let me sign off, and I'll just listen, and we'll go to the next person. Thank you, Michael.
Cool. Muchas gracias.
Bye-bye.
So, Jeannie, you've got another caller for us. Let's say hello.
Next caller is 417. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Magda calling.
Hey there, young lady.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you. Blessings to all of you. And this is a very short question that I need to get off and just listen. Can you explain, and perhaps you already did and I missed it, please explain the difference between liberty and freedom. I've been listening to the last part here, but I may have missed your definition. Thank you, and I will listen.
Okay, cool. Well, again, the mind of man wants to have freedom. I want to do what I want to do, and to hell with everybody else. Well, good luck. Never going to happen. There is no such thing as freedom. There are eternal forces, and you are bound by them, and you don't have a choice about it. If you understand, for instance, do they fly airplanes by violating the law of gravity? Heavier than air machines, how can you do that? You must be violating the law of gravity. No, I have a relationship with the law of gravity. I understand how the law of gravity works, and therefore, by harmonizing with the law of gravity, I get to build a heavier than air machine. How cool is that? But I only have the liberty to do that within the confines. I don't have the freedom to say, well, I think I'll shorten the wingspan to 2 inches instead of having them to be 80 feet wide. I think I'll shorten the wingspan to 2 inches because that way I don't have to use as much steel. I'm the lawmaker, so I have the freedom to do that. Well, you could go ahead and do that, but your airplane's going to crash. And the reason it's going to crash is because you just fell out of harmony with the law of gravity. And so when we shoot for freedom in the sense of, I want what I want when I want it, and I want it to work the way I want it to, we're living in a fantasy world. There is no such thing. But there is liberty, and that is, within the confines of the law, I can work. And when I do, then I can do things that the ordinary person won't be able to understand, and it won't make sense. Like, you know, if the average person said, well, I'm going to build an airplane, it's like, good luck. Only the people, you'll notice that the only people that can build an airplane are the people who really have a great relationship with gravity. You can't go, well, you know, I just came in off the street. My specialty was English, and here I am. I'm a university graduate. I'm going to build an airplane. It's like you're going to have to spend years coming into relationship with and understanding the law of gravity in order to build a heavier-than-air machine. It is the same in every arena of life. There are laws that operate in the mind. There are laws that operate in the body. There are laws that operate with nutrition. There are laws that operate with how you grow your food. And if you understand those laws and you have a great relationship with them, then you have liberty within the confines of those laws. If you have no relationship with them and you cry, freedom, 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 you will die. It will destroy you. So we have perfect liberty if we have a perfect understanding of how the energy system, the law, works. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. You are bound by the law. You have no choice. Again, you know, Paul, he plays this game. Hey, we're not under the law anymore. It's like, good luck. Good luck. Never going to happen. You will always be under the law. And when you recognize that, and of course, many people want to say, well, oh, no, there was a new covenant. It's like, yeah, there was a new covenant. You live as the active presence of love, and with that in your mind, you have liberty in arenas where humans otherwise don't seem to have liberty. But you are still bound by the law. you are still, if you step off the cliff, your feet are going down. You don't have a choice about that. So that would be, for me, the difference between law and, or freedom and liberty, is understanding how the eternal forces work and working within those eternal forces gives us liberty. But we can't say, well, I have freedom, so I'm going to make gravity work the other way. I'm going to have my feet go up in the morning. You don't have that kind of freedom in any arena of your life, in the way your mind works. You know, they ask Yeshua, what's most important in the law for humans? And he says, you got to have rachma. Rachma is a word that represents a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain. He says, first law is you've got to have that active. If you want a human life and you want the liberty to function as a human being, you've got to be in harmony with that law. And when you do, then your mind will work as a human mind is designed to work. You have no freedom about that. You can't say, well, I'm going to do hate and fear, and I'm just going to see that, you know, say that everything's going to work out just fine, because it doesn't work that way. The mind works, like gravity, according to a set of laws. The first law, and again, this isn't the rule of a superior, this isn't something you're going to get punished if you break, because you can't break it. Nobody's ever broken the law of gravity. Lots of people have been broken in their avoidable collisions with gravity, but gravity never sustained even the least fracture. The law is never broken. It is we who, in our avoidable collisions with law, that get broken. When we wake up, the game changes. And then we have liberty, what we're designed to live under. In relationship to and understanding the law, we then have that liberty that we would like to have. Different than freedom. So I hope that makes sense to your question, or and if you're still there and it's more refinement, I'd love to hear your voice and what your thoughts are. How does that fit for you? And, of course, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you have a question for us, a thought for us, we would love to hear your sweet voice. We would love for you to pick up the phone and let us know what your thoughts are. So, Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up, or anybody else in the chat room with a question or a thought?
We do have a hand up, and there was some comment in the chat room. We were talking about words, and the comment was made that they thought that people didn't change the words on purpose, that they just changed as time, like with evolution or whatever. And I was just getting ready to type that Vladimir Lenin, who was a Russian politician and a communist revolutionary, actually said, change the meaning of the words and you can control a culture. And that was part of what they were about, was controlling the people. And so they deliberately changed the meaning of some words in order to do that. You want to talk about that just a minute, and then we do have another caller.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's been done wholesale all around the planet. Men have purposely changed the meaning of words in order to manipulate and control their own minds and the minds of others. I mean, it is rampant in the culture. And it's been happening all over the globe. You know, Lenin sort of refined it to a scientific understanding. But if you just listen to the politicians, you'll see how they harp on certain words that have nothing to do with the resolution of the problem, but have to do with the maintenance and the continuation of the problem. Because when you can continue a problem, you can get more money from people. You know, I was listening to an interview last week. We were at a place where we've got a television set here. We don't usually watch the news, but I've watched a little bit, and they were interviewing what's his name, Giuliani, former mayor of New York. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, we just have to spend it. We need more money. We can solve this problem. We'll just follow everybody who seems like the slightest terrorist threat. We'll put a man on them, and we'll take care of them. Well, you know, I understand that it takes about 30 people to track one person in this country. So what Giuliani said is, and he just straight out said it, is just give us more money. All we want is everything that you can possibly produce. It's an old story from kings, and the kings who accumulate the wealth and own the corporations that get the money out of the pockets of the people change the conversation. I think that that is rampant in the culture. It is rampant. And we need to wake up. We need to reclaim our language, understand how our language works, and get back to the truth of who we are as human beings, functioning out of love. And when we do, then our language will be in alignment and in harmony with love, instead of in this old hostility and fear-based game that has run the planet for just too long. So you've got a caller for us, Jeannie? Or a comment in the chat room?
Yes, yes, I do. And it's area code 541. You're on the air. Is this Julie?
Yes.
Hey there, young lady. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. You sound good, too.
I'm having fun. I love what I do. I am blessed.
Oh, God. I love it, too. Oh, thank you for the blessings you've extended. I just find myself more and more amazed. I read the Course in Miracles, and I'm going, Michael was able to extract that somehow and put it into a worksheet. I mean, I was reading a lesson, number 65, and it says, my only purpose is the one that God gave me. And it has to do with salvation. And when the ego reads that, the ego doesn't want anything to do with salvation, but now that I've got the tools and know what the tools of salvation are, it makes sense. It's not just a concept. It's an avenue. It's a way. So thank you.
And if you listen to, before you go too far, if you listen to that quote from Einstein, he's very clear. The way you choose to see the universe is the way you will experience it. The only thing you need salvation from, there's not some big evil dude out there that's going to get it. There is a hostility and fear-based mind, and if we've got one, our salvation is the healing of that hostility and fear-based mind. It's not about some dude with a red suit, a tail, and a pitchfork. It's about the content of our own mind and living as we are designed to live as this awesome act of presence of love. First law, Rachma. You have that condition in your mind. It is the active condition in your mind, 24/7, 365, and then you see life through a filter. And the filter that you see through spreads an energy, and just like Einstein said, you get to experience the world just the way you selected to. For the people who buy into the language based in hostility or fear, they get to live in that world. And it's real for them. And it keeps happening to them over and over and over again until they finally decide, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. I'm the only one that was there every time. Maybe this life is about me. Maybe this life isn't about everybody else that I've been blaming for it. When I do that, everything starts to shift. Everything starts to change. And I literally live in a different world. And that's the world we're designed to live in. That is the world that's based in the active presence of love. 24/7, 365.
So the first paragraph says, the full acceptance of salvation as your only function necessarily entails two phases. The recognition of salvation as your function, which I think hearing what you just said and what you've been saying this morning, I think that that is the Rachma part, the filter
exactly.
Or the perception.
Yes.
Yeah. And then
that's what will
and then,
save you. From the only thing
yes.
you need saving from.
And then the second part is, because there's two phases, so you hold a condition of Rachma in your mind, and then it says in the Course, and the relinquishment of all the other goals you have invented for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the canceling of goals. So you, Michael, I don't know, you were so guided, however it came through you, you really did.
Well,
it.
Actually,
you got it.
Actually, you're putting the responsibility in an error in the wrong place. It wasn't me. I got to play with Yeshua's first century Aramaic word. He's the one that figured it out. He's the one that put it together.
Well,
and
the language.
Then I let myself and listen long enough to get what was being said.
Mm-hmm. And this is from a lesson where we're told to be quiet and consider thoughts, and so then the thought that my only function is the one God gave me, it says later in the lesson, this thought reflects a goal that is preventing me from accepting my only function. So we're supposed to sit quietly and keep letting thoughts that are interfering thoughts be removed. And
yes.
It's says, yeah, and you use the interfering thoughts, interfering energies. It says, after a while, interfering thoughts will become harder to find.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, they do disappear. They dissolve.
They do. Yep.
So, So now, so this is Holy Spirit is just guiding me and teaching me lately. I had that lesson a month ago, pretty much exactly to the day, because I kind of flip open in the Course in Miracles. I've studied it a long time, so I just open up to something and I say, what do you want to communicate to me this time? And so I had another interaction with my roommate that is teaching me about, and I never ever really quite understood when you share this story about truth. You're talking about truth, and there's kind of two sides to the coin, and it's Bill and Mary, a married couple, or I'm not sure their names, and they each see something different. And then there's the actual truth, and so there's the actual truth that we project our perceptions onto based on what's inside us. And I never really quite got this thing about how someone out there could be really arguing that there's this truth and I violated something in them, and yet I know, you know, I just had nothing to do with it, and it's not even true what they're saying. I actually can point to facts that it's not true, and yet they're wound up with this whole belief system about how it's causing problems and effects on them. And I finally was able to grasp, wow, he's got a whole idea picture of truth, and I didn't have anything to do with it. And the next step was I tried to explain to him and teach him some tools, but he wasn't in that space. So I stopped, and I realized, okay, the denial in me is showing me this, so I get to go do worksheets. It's not about me fixing him, I get to just go do some worksheets on this, and I'm able to pull away from the argument and, you know, and not worry about fixing him or anything like that. It's just I get to go do worksheets, and I get to find the true freedom.
Nice
so,
cat.
Cool. But, yeah,
awesome.
It's just so cool. And so
sounds
what DVD
like your
is
inner
it?
Tutor. Remember, the idea is to activate your intuition, your inner tutor. And it sounds like your inner tutor, with the work you've been doing, is really cranking in, cutting in. That's awesome. Nice.
Yeah, well, good. Well, I wondered, because I was going to say, can you explain that again? But I guess I'm being shown, I'm being taught. And that's the neat thing about how we're shown and taught, because I never know what lesson's going to come up next for me. But because I've developed the brain cells working with these tools, I'm able to handle whatever comes up next. And, you know, so the lesson of that wasn't totally clear or maybe an actual spiritual faculty of mine yet is being shown to me to strengthen my abilities.
Yep. Yep. Sounds right on track.
So, okay, good.
You got it. That's what it's all about, Alfie.
And what DVD do you tell that story about the two people and actual truth and perceptual truth? Do you recall?
You know, I'm not sure what which story you're actually even talking about or where I talk about it. I don't know what
I'll cross my path. It's okay. I'll let someone else come on in. And thank you, Michael.
All right.
All right.
Why is this happening to me again? He talks about actuality versus reality. I don't know if that would be quite your reference.
Okay. Yeah, probably. I know I'll come across it because I'm going to be having a support group now. I'm starting Sunday morning. Yay.
Awesome. Well, send us the information. We'll put it on the website so people can come join you.
Yeah,
drop
me an email,
okay.
Julie.
Okay. Should I set that up with Susan Giles?
No, if you'll just drop me an email the time and everything, I'll put it on there.
Okay.
Time, contact information, and we'll send you a camera-ready flyer with all the information on it. We'll put it on the website.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Okay.
Okay. All right. Blessings.
All right. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Right. We're down to about 9 minutes, but we do have another caller.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
Area code 765, you're on the air.
Hi there, Michael Zini. This is Sunny.
Hey there, and, you're welcome.
Hey. I know we have limited time. I'm sorry?
What can we do to support you today?
Well, I was hoping somewhere in here you might be able to supply me with a mind shifter that I could take into an independent still point. I've deduced a few things that have been kind of typified by having watched the movie Lucy. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, yeah, it's awesome.
Okay. That explains, Michael, that explains to you much of what I've attempted to communicate. Yeah, I feel, yay. There's a point of reference for me to explain. And I, so hopefully that's served us in this conversation. In this recovery process, I'm still having some physical issues. And I do have this point in my spine that is behind my heart chakra that I don't know if it's denial or whatever's going on there. I'm not getting that to open up. And with the rest of getting my full brain to function, we don't know if it's the ocular nerve, optic nerve, or the vagus nerve. My Dr. Reem's teacher, Dr. Carey's teacher, explains to me that my brain is tired. And that would be a simple statement to some people. However, I understand Lucy very well. So I don't know what part or factions of my brain are tired.
So here's, you don't have to figure it out. Remember the pseudo solution, number one pseudo solution to non-being mind is if I could just figure this out. You don't have to figure it out. All you have to do is forgive. So the reason your brain is tired is because you're maintaining goals that your mind is trying to achieve. Go, 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 and it just runs it down. So start looking at goals. I don't know if you've got the CD or the DVD on getting the stress you need, but we do a goal-canceling meditation there, and we go back through your whole lifetime. Go back and start out, and you don't need this DVD to do it. Just go back and start thinking about, as a kid, your relationship with your father. What goals did you have for him? Your relationship with your mother. What goals did you have for her? Go back to in utero experience. Go back to early childhood. Go back to the point where your mother passed. What goals did you have for her? Now, here's what we know. Once you load a goal in the mind, there are only two ways to get rid of it. You've either got to achieve it or cancel it. And so go back through everything in your life. Go back through your childhood, your religious education. What did you want from church? What did you want from education? What goals did you have for your body? What goals did you have for relationships? What goals did you have for that first little boy that you fell in love with when you were in the second grade and the one that, you know, you ran into when you were 14, and start canceling all of those things? They're the things that lead to fatigue. And as you cancel those goals, then you become free of the stresses involved, and your brain will go into recovery. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you just took me blotto. that's a lot. And that's where, too, with the way, and again, I almost said figuring it out, where to start, where is the goal? I know that a lot of those things I've covered, I don't know where I'm at with this. And that's why I said it's like, where is a good point to just let go, unlock, you know? I don't know what a goal would be that, you know, there's just daily life, you know? And then finding the starting point to oftentimes even do the worksheets on, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I just gave you the starting point. The starting point is go back to from the very beginning and allow yourself to be guided to any goals that you had in relationship to anything. You know, if, you know, I was sitting eating and my big brother jammed food down my throat, my goal for him was to be gentle with me. And right. he wasn't. And so, you know, if that's a goal that's in my mind from being 2 years of age, it's still there. And notice how I'm struggling trying to force people to be gentle with me. When I cancel that goal, I collapse that stress. So, and then you start asking Rukka to take you back to genetic goals, because we came into this life with all kinds of goals. And each goal, and what you might want to do is you might want to go ahead and order that DVD, Getting the Stress You Need, and start to work with that. And that ties in the whole cause of stress and the resolution, and there is that meditation in there too.
Yeah, and that is my thing, I think, you know, repeatedly, the genetic thing, and a lot of that has come up with the family funeral most recently. And been working through some of that. Could be the totality right there, right? Maybe.
Absolutely. I had my mute button on there, so I couldn't get back real fast. But yes, absolutely.
Right, and it's wherever.
And look over my whole life, you know, my current events and past events, and start canceling those goals. Because, you know, let me share a story. I remember working with a gal in Atlanta years ago, and this young woman was probably in her 40s, and she had been promiscuous all her life, had no control over herself. She'd meet a man, she'd be in bed with him. She hated that about herself, but she couldn't help herself. And when she got in touch with being about 6 years of age and just loving, cherishing her uncle, liking to be close to him, hugging him, sitting on his knee, and around about the age of six, he strong-armed her, pushed her away. Nothing inappropriate happened that she remembers, or that there's no indication there was anything inappropriate. He just pushed her away for whatever was going on for him. And once she uncovered that goal to be close and loving and connected and touching with her uncle, away went her promiscuity. That goal was still operating. Here's a man who drives the mind to behavior, feelings, thoughts, controlled from the unconscious level. Once she canceled that goal, that was the end of that inclination.
Right. It's like the first euphoric high never to be attained again, but they keep trying to get there. Right. Yeah. Well, and then I think that there is, from what I'm feeling, there's a big fear window that I'm afraid to open. So, I want to dedicate time and out of daily life and living to throw that one open, Michael. But I think I have been skirting the issue with myself. I thank you. We touched
so,
it.
So did you hear the quote that I read from Einstein?
Maybe I didn't get on the show early enough. I missed the first half of the show, hon.
So I read a quote from Einstein where he says that you either have to decide that the universe is a safe place or it's a hostile place. And the decision that you make will determine the world you experience. And so if you made the decision early that it was a hostile place, then that will tend to create your experience. So you remake that as a choice. And you choose to start to see the world as a holy, supportive, nurturing space. And you allow yourself to heal the parts of your mind that hold that it's a dangerous or a hostile place. And as you let go of that, up will come your fear. You'll get to look at it. You'll get to breathe through it. You'll get to dissolve it. And everything changes. And we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm going to have to close the show out. Appreciate your call. And everybody, we really appreciate you being with us. We are in St. Pete for our last workshop tonight. We're doing codependence to interdependence. We are not doing mind shifters and still point breathing tomorrow. But we are doing codependence to interdependence tonight, 7 o'clock. Join us at First Unity in St. Petersburg. And create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process.